Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, and it's the simulcast, which means we're coming at you on Periscope. If you're watching this live, if you are just listening to the podcast, go check out zonecoverage.com, because you'll see me and my ugly mug on there talking to you about Minnesota Twins baseball. I like doing these stand-ups because this is about as close as I'll ever get to a stand-up routine. All kidding aside, though, thanks for joining. If you have any questions at all, please, instead of using the chat room on Periscope, send them to me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. I have a monitor set up to address those questions from you. So if you have questions, again, whether it's about the Minnesota Twins, who are playing right now against the New York Yankees, looks like Phil Hughes is probably pitching for his future on this rotation, or rather roster, as Lavelle E. Neal says. If you have questions about the game, questions about the cuts to Tyler Duffy or Alan Buznitz, or the cuts from beforehand, hit me up with those, whether it's Nick Buss, any of those guys. Other than that, we are looking at a pitching staff that is really rounding into focus. Obviously, a four-man starting staff, and then probably a bullpen of either eight or nine arms. Seeing kind of contrasting reports, I did see Mike Berardino say today, eight relievers, which means they're probably going to choose between Phil Hughes and Gabriel Moya for that last spot, or possibly Tyler Kinley. Personally, I think you could keep all of them and go with a short bench if Miguel Sano is going to be suspended. Now, with that said, it sounds like, based on everything we're seeing, now that's not saying that I have any inside information, but perhaps the Twins do, that the way that they're structuring things right now, it sort of feels like they have some kind of belief that Miguel Sano may not be suspended. So if Miguel Sano is not suspended, I expected initially... a three-man bench with Eric Ibar, Mitch Garver, and Robbie Grossman. Now, what Lavelle E. Neal just tweeted from Fort Myers was that he expects the Twins to carry two outfielders. So, to carry two outfielders, you'd have to have a four-man bench, of course, which means they're expecting Miguel Sano to be active on opening day, which also means they're going to go with the 12-man pitching staff. Now, if that's the case, I would suspect that you're either looking at Zach Granit or Jake Cave for that second outfield bench spot, or you could use that roster exemption created by the Jorge Polanco suspension to add Ryan Lemaire to the 40-man roster. Now, that exemption could also go to Eric Ibar, so there's still a lot of pieces that are kind of up in the air. And I guess what I wrote yesterday on zonecoverage.com is that my theory is this roster has gotten more confusing as spring training has gone on, not less confusing. You expect with these cuts that lineups would become a little bit more obvious with which direction teams are going and that sort of thing. But the continued uncertainty around Miguel Sano has made things difficult. The continued uncertainty and now certainty about Jorge Polanco being suspended is certainly opened up a spot for someone, again, like Ibar. Now, if Sano is not suspended, I think you're looking at a bench of Garver, Adrianza, Grossman, and then again, like I said, it is open for that second outfield spot, which Lavelle said he is hearing might happen. So, if you're in the chat room and want to say who you think that second outfielder should be, feel free. Otherwise, send questions to @Brandon_Warren on Twitter. We can talk about those. So yeah, I did do my roster prediction yesterday on Zone Coverage, and I had Tyler Duffy in it. Not that surprising to me that relievers with options are getting sent out, just like Alan Buznitz, who had a terrific year last year. Those guys combined for over 100 innings of work for the Twins last year, which means a couple things. First of all, the Twins feel that the guys that they brought in are going to be that much better or that much more useful, that it's going to shove some of these lesser effective innings aside, which I think is terrific. It means that they're going to cut into the deficit that was created last year when they gave 300 or some odd innings to Phil Hughes and Bartolo Colon and Michael Tonkin, Craig Breslow. Again, guys, please, please, please send your Twitter questions to me or your Periscope questions to me on Twitter so that I can read them, because I can see them on my screen there. On Periscope, they disappear within 5 seconds and my brain does not work well enough to keep track of those. So again, please, please, please tweet me your questions. I'm more than happy to answer them. I'll hang out for at least 20 minutes and maybe a half an hour though. So yeah, again, please, please, please send me your questions on Twitter instead of Periscope. Excuse me, now where was I? I think I was talking about, Tyler Duffy and Alan Buznitz. The thing about this is when teams send out relievers like this, it's pretty ordinary around the league. I think for the Twins, especially in the Terry Ryan era, we grew accustomed to kind of seeing some stability in the bullpen for better or worse. While other bullpens on other teams, they flush through guys like this crazy. If you want an example of this, check out what Kevin Quackenbush went through with the Padres. I think one year he was promoted and demoted like 7 times. Now he's out of options. He's been jumping around, and now he's landed someplace else. He's not back at he's not back in San Diego. He's kind of jumped around now, and he's kind of in that fluctuation part of his career. I think he might be with the Reds, if I'm not mistaken. But it's not unusual for teams to recycle these kind of arms, even when they're pitching well, just because of how disposable they think they are. And Doubles, I see you only have one device right now. I apologize. So re-ask your question, and I will see it in Periscope, and I will be happy to answer it for you, Doubles. Sometimes it's hard for me to understand that people are only using one device here. It's just I can't look down, write down questions, too. So I'll do what I can to make this as easy for everybody, but it's tough that I want to answer all these questions and that sort of thing. So Doubles, again, please resend that question, and I'd be more than happy to answer it. So let's go to the questions. We have John Miller at MillerJohnP. He wants to know if Tyler Duffy has reached his ceiling and if he has a future. Yes, I think he has a future. I don't think he's necessarily reached his ceiling from a results standpoint. I think what we saw in the peripherals for Tyler Duffy last year, which is, pretty good strikeout rate and some grounders, not too many walks, but he seemed to give up runs in bunches or in like weird sequences. Like he didn't really have a home run problem per se. Phil Hughes gives up a lot of home runs. He didn't have anything like that, but it just seemed like when he gave up home runs, they were just at very inopportune times. Guys on base, and so his ERA was inflated as a result. He pitched better than better than I think he maybe would have gotten credit for ERA-wise with his FIP or his ex-FIP and that sort of thing. So, I still think there's room for improvement. What do I think his ceiling is? I think his ceiling is Addison Reed, which is crazy because Addison Reed's a Twin. But when you look at Reed's peripherals, they're not exactly sexy. I mean, he gets some strikeouts. He doesn't really walk anybody, but he doesn't throw 95. He doesn't have a ton of strikeouts. He doesn't have he doesn't have one skill that carries him through. It's just he's a very, very solid reliever with experience. And so to that end, I still think Duffy has a very, very real future with this team. So Double says, is there any chance of acquiring a shortstop for this season? He says it seems doubtful, or he feels like it's doubtful, but this front office is very resourceful. The name that I keep watching out for is Jurickson Profar, and I know that's more name than game at this point. But for me, the biggest thing with Profar is the familiarity with Levine, the fact that he's not happy being a utility guy. And again, it's not really that he deserves more based on how he's played, but he's always had that pedigree of being a better player than maybe a utility player has been deserving of. Now, with that said, Elvis Andrus can opt out of his deal at the end of this season. So if the Rangers want to keep Profar as insurance for that, then I understand it. I totally get it. If they want to keep him for that, it makes sense. With that said, I don't know that there's a lot of proof that spending this year as a utility guy is going to make him an able-bodied replacement for Andrus moving forward after this year. Now, he's behind Rougui Odor at second base for sure. He's obviously not going to supplant Adrian Beltre at third. They've got some interesting stuff going on there because Joey Gallo is probably the future at third, but he's playing first right now. They got Tommy Joseph, who they just claimed off waivers. So there's obviously, and they're not going to play Profar in left. And Willie Calhoun's going to play left probably in the first month of the year and stay there at least until he becomes a DH. So it's pretty crowded, but with that said too, they don't really have a natural backup shortstop. So Profar fits there. Now they did trade with the Phillies on Wednesday. I believe it was Eliezer Alvarez, guy that's, you know, he was a big time prospect a couple years ago. And I mean big time like he was just a fairly well regarded guy. But he's only played at Double A, but he is on the 40-man roster. Now, does that give any kind of indication that they may be preparing for something? Not necessarily. It's just something to think about. But if they have someone like a Hanser Alberto or someone like that who can step in and be a backup shortstop, and again, I don't know that much about Alberto, then again, that maybe would indicate that they are looking for the ability to move Profar to keep him happy and still get some value out of him. With that said, there's no compelling reason to believe this. This is just me kind of maybe either wish casting or just hoping that the Twins would pursue this kind of talent. With that said, I mean, it's not like there's really an opening up the middle for the Twins either. It's 80 games, but at the end of the year, they could bring up Nick Gordon, who could probably equally perform to what Profar does. They could, you know, Royce Lewis isn't that far off. He's maybe 2 years away. And so they're not really looking for any sort of long-term fit. With that said, bringing in more talent is never a bad idea. So I do think they're resourceful. I do think that they're probably looking. But I also think that A-Ray Adrianza, you know, finding someone to exceed what he gave them last year may be difficult. And again, maybe he's not guaranteed to repeat what he did last year, but he can pick it at short. Doesn't embarrass himself defensively really anywhere. I mean, he's not an outfielder, but he shouldn't be playing outfield anyway. So I think they'll probably stick with Adrianza. I just think, though, that if they wanted to be resourceful, as you noted, it does make a lot of sense to go out and look, you know, especially now with cuts coming. I don't know. I think that, you know, cuts are coming, and so there's going to be guys who are available that are, you know, fringy guys. Like Adrianza last year got in a numbers crunch with the Giants, got picked up by the Brewers, got in a number crunch with the Brewers, and then got picked up by the Twins. So those 40-man crunches, it really stands to reason that it's good to be opportunistic at that point. Doubles, I saw your question about if teams should be punished for a 40-man spot if a player is suspended. Personally, I don't think so. I just don't think that punishing the team for the player's indiscretion outside of them missing the postseason is the kind of thing that should happen. I don't think that the team should be punished any further than not getting to use that player in October. Now, I don't know. I just maybe there's something else that should be in there that the team gets dinged for. But again, I don't think that it's really on the team to babysit these guys too. They're adults. They're, you know, fully grown men who have to know what they're putting into their bodies. And for as much as Polanco deserves some heat for taking this substance or having this substance in his body, I do also think there is some potential credence to the fact that he didn't know what was in that shot he was taking. Now, there's no excuse. You have to know what you're putting into your body. And I don't know if that's more of a factor of him being away from the team and you know, out of the United States. I'm not saying that's a problem or part of the issue. But if it's his trainer from there, he's got to have these people better vetted too. From further medical credentials to know what they're giving him. There's a lot of money at stake for these guys to make mistakes like this. And again, I think it can be a mistake whether it's intentional or unintentional. I just think too, I don't think he had the intent of cheating. It feels to me like he's a good kid and it was just a mistake. But with that said, You know, we don't know why anybody uses or gets caught using. It's something that happens. So, I don't know. Tony Hoagland wants to know, what are my thoughts on Paul Molitor using a four-man rotation? Honestly, I think at the beginning of the year, it makes a lot of sense. It limits the damage done by Irvin Santana being injured and, you know, filling in that spot with a substandard pitcher or a pitcher who may not give them as much as a reliever could out of, you know, multiple appearances or that sort of thing. I also think, too, though, that they're going to have to get creative with moving these guys around once Santana gets back, if Sano is suspended, once he gets back, once Polanco gets back. So it's going to be a very different looking team a couple weeks into the year, a month into the year, and then especially 2 or 3 months into the year once Polanco comes back. I mean, also there's off days you have to account for. So you're not going to use these guys in a pattern that's going to allow them to really stay on their 4 days of rest if you don't do the four-man rotation. So I really like that idea, and I really think that it makes a lot of sense for them to do that. Okay, Matt Liefeld, a friend of mine, wants to know, why did it take so long for free agents to sign this year, and will Lance Lynn sign a longer contract next year? Now, so you guys probably know I do a podcast called Locked On Twins in addition to this. So what we talked about with Lance Lynn on that podcast on last night's edition, again, check it out, Locked On Twins. You can find it iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, all kinds of cool stuff. Lance Lynn has more to gain by one solid year with the Twins, for instance, than Alex Cobb would have had signing a one-year deal with. Again, let's just say even the Twins. Let's say they both sign one-year deals with the Twins and have identical seasons. A 3.80 ERA, 8 strikeouts per 9, good rates, all that stuff. With Lynn's background and Lynn's track record, teams are going to see that next offseason and say, oh, yeah, so this is the guy who we missed out for. You know, Tommy John surgery basically sapped that for a year, which was 2017. But now he's back to who he used to be. That's a 4-year sample size saying, hey, Lance Lynn used to be good, got injured, needed a year to get back. Now he's Lance Lynn again. Maybe he gets a 5-year deal for $75 million. If Alex Cobb does that, teams are still going to look at Alex Cobb and say, yeah, well, so if you throw 180 innings this year, you've only done it once in your career. If you get 30 starts in, you've only done it once in your career. They're not going to completely write off what he's done in the past or allow 1 year to rewrite the narrative on him. And so for me, it doesn't necessarily make sense that Cobb got more money and more years, but at the same time, it makes more sense to me that Cobb decided to take 4 years at maybe a little less than he wanted than Lynn. It made more sense for him to do that than for him to take a one-year deal and try to rebuild value. So as much as I think Lynn is a better pitcher and is going to be a better pitcher moving forward, it made sense for Cobb to take the deal he got, even if it wasn't necessarily a team he wanted to sign with. Because let's not forget, $57 million is a life-changing amount of money, and, you know, it might be the only big contract he ever gets. So I think they both played it fairly well. And even though on the surface it doesn't make sense, I kind of understand the thought processes behind it. Now, why it took so long for all these players to sign, I mean, there's a lot of theories. I mean, there's obviously the collusion theory, which, you know, you can subscribe to a little bit. There's also a lot of teams really not trying to contend, which is meaning they're not going to be in the mix for these guys. Which is why a lot of these guys fell into the Twins' laps. But I do also think we're seeing a changing of the guard where teams don't want to pay 30-year-old players, 30 and up, to play for them for 5 or 6 or 7 years like we've seen in the past with some of the bigger deals in the last decade to even 20 years when free agent contracts started to get to be a real big thing. So if this is an official changing of the guard to where shorter contracts are in play, what I'm hoping for is this: that the money still gets pumped in, but at a higher rate. So if Bryce Harper has a 15-year offer on the table for $30 million per, he might be more apt to take an 8-year deal with $40 million per year. Now, 15 at 30 is going to be, what, $450 million? And 8 years at $40 million would be $320. Obviously, $130 million is a big gap to transcend, But then he's also hitting the market in 8 years, which for now he'd be, what, 33, 34. He could still probably cash in again, assuming he's played well. So if it's shorter deals for more money, I'm not saying the players win that trade-off outright. And I'm also not saying that it's necessarily going to appease the baseball labor lawyer sect of Twitter, because obviously there's a lot of people who are really upset about this kind of thing. And also, you know, minor league wages, which is a whole another discussion for another day. But it might be what's best for the players in terms of what's available to them. Again, you're not going to convince billionaire owners to just hand over money just because. So if you can convince them that shorter deals for more money is a better deal for both sides, that might be the best way to avoid some kind of work stoppage in the near future. I don't know. That's just my theory. I don't know that teams necessarily colluded, but there is certainly some smoke there. I also think, again, like people have said, teams have become smarter about analyzing these guys. And let's not forget, look at all of these big-time free agents from this year's class. Pretty much all of them have some sort of a question mark. Lance Lynn coming back from Tommy John. Cobb has durability issues. Arrieta has cascading secondary numbers, velocity down, strikeouts down, and quality of innings in addition to quantity of innings going down. JD Martinez really, really crushed the baseball, but it was for 1 year. Again, really, really nice player for before that, but which player are you getting? Are you getting Justin Upton, or are you getting the next level guy who, you know, can sustain a 1,000 OPS and 50 home runs? And, you know, Justin Upton signed that deal before the market opened, and it seems to me that was a pretty good assessment of the market that he decided to sign rather than, you know, put himself out there to the highest bidder. And who knows what he would have done to the market if he would have signed early and set the market a lot differently for someone like Martinez. So I think it's a way more complicated market issue than people are willing to give credit for, or it's just more than we can put on one specific factor. And so that's why I have a hard time really coming up with one, you know, one really obvious idea of why this market acted this way or did it this way. Terry Anderson said, let's see, what did he say? Oh, do you think the Twins will see Alex Cobb in the season opening series versus the Orioles? No, I do not. Sounds like he negotiated in his deal, or the Orioles negotiated with him, to send him to the minor leagues to start the season. And with that said, he has options, but he also has the requisite service time to refuse the ability to be sent down. So they're going to send him to AAA. I think it's Norfolk in their system to send him down to the minors and let him get a little bit stretched out. So I think he's going to get stretched out, and it will allow him to come up in maybe 2 weeks or so. So, no, I do not think the Twins are going to see him. Yeah, well, that's all I got for questions. I just saw that somebody might not be getting audio, so I'm not going to keep going here and you know, hopefully run the risk of the audio not working. I hope it is. But, hey, you've been listening to Locked On Twins, Midwest Swing, and part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network. Check out Locked On Twins. Check out zonecoverage.com. Follow me on Twitter @Brandon_Warren. And until next time, be well.